did not assign the two girls the two drawers.
I have two very difficult schools, and he said, I know that you two girls, by your temperament, would fill this bill. One school is the home for crippled children, and the other one is the Forbes School, and that teacher is very difficult to get along with. He says, you two decide which schools you want to go to. So I said to my friend, you select the school you want to go to, and I'll take the other one. And she decided to go to the home for crippled children. And I went to Forbes School, and that is the school that I attended as a child. Now this Miss Cook was my teacher, and she used to sit in the cloakroom and make notes. She'd listen, and she was, I don't like to use the word, but a typical old maid. And she wanted me to stay for lunch, and I wouldn't stay for lunch because I lived two blocks away and my mother was sick. And I said, I don't see why I should bring a lunch when I live so close to the school, and I wouldn't stay. I defied that. And then when I really thought I did something wrong and might affect my grade, these children were all Jewish, and I had to teach these Christmas songs when it came to Christmas. And every time, it had the word Jesus or Christ, I changed the word to He, because I felt that that would be less offensive to the parents. When the music supervisor came around, she said, oh, Miss Myers, you didn't teach these songs correctly. I said, well, Miss Massey, I said, I'll confess I didn't. But I said, I know these children, I know their parents, and it would be a little offensive for me to teach it the way it was written, and I thought this would be the lesser of two evils.
What'd she say?
She didn't say anything. At the end of the semester, Dr. Davis called me to come down to his office. And I went down, I thought, oh, what did I do? He said, I have to compliment you. He said, the grades came in, and Miss Cook gave you 85, and he said, in my estimation, that's equivalent to 95 from any other supervisor.
That night.
Now, I got a job. I was 16th in a class of about 100. Now, I was one subject that was, although we had artists in the family, I couldn't draw a straight line. And the Miss, her name was Rothbart. Miss Rothbart was an artist, and she said, I want to explain something to you girls. She says, I'm giving Miss Myers 95, not because she's so good in art, but I never had a student that tried so hard.
Wonderful. I wish the teachers would do that now.
Now, Dr. Davis knew each and every girl because he taught psychology.
And where did you go to work then, if you're trained?
Then I was assigned to a school on the south side, up near, you know, where the monastery is.
How did you get there?
By streetcar. I had to take two streetcars. I had to go to Brady Street and take a streetcar up 18th Street.
How long did you keep?
Now, I taught there. Well, let me explain to you. I had three grades, 1A, 2B, and 2A. And this was, at that time they started what they called the platoon system, where the children went from one room to another. But this was the traditional school where the teacher taught everything. And instead of the children moving, the next semester I taught 2B, 2A, and 3B. You had the same children for 2 years. Now, I was very fortunate when it came to art, because in those days, they didn't have creative art. The art supervisor, well, by the way, we had supervisors that came, some came every 2 weeks, some came every 3 weeks, like the physical education director came every 3 weeks, and the others came every 2 weeks, and they would give you an assignment. If they were satisfied with the results of your teaching, you automatically got a $100 raise a year.
That was good.
I started out making $120 a month. They had just raised it from $87.50. Mm-hmm. And if the supervisor was satisfied, you would get a $100 raise a year.
From each supervisor?
What?
Just one 100. You couldn't get from your art supervisor and your phys ed?
Oh, no. Just $100 a year. Now, I didn't feel, well, let's say I felt that it was wrong for the teacher and for the students, because when you had three divisions, you could not give them the amount of time that you should have given them. Mm-hmm. If you'd only have two divisions. So my problem was to find busy work for the two groups while I was teaching the other group. Now, sometime after I started to teach, I got a lucky break. I got two lucky breaks. One lucky break was that this was a Catholic neighborhood and families had many children. We had a big kindergarten, and the kindergarten teacher thought, but they had a meeting once a month with the mothers, and she thought she was doing the mothers a favor, and she brought a nurse in to talk about birth control, and they took all their kids out of the kindergarten, and they sent them to St. Michael's, which is a school right near us.
Isn't that something? Same problems existing today. What year was this?
So she didn't have any children in the afternoon. She had so few children. She had them all in the morning. And the principal would let her take one of my classes for reading. The other break I had was that my principal couldn't type. And when my room was right next to her office. It was an old wooden building, and, you know, she could hear everything that went on. And when she had to type a requisition for materials, or she wanted a letter typed, she would come in, and her hobby was arithmetic, and she would ask me to do her typing while she taught arithmetic.
Boy, you were lucky.
But I just felt that it wasn't fair to the kids, and I was exhausted when I'd come home. And so I made up my mind that I was going to do something about it. So I went to Pitt, and I took a course in how to teach English to foreign-born people. And at that time, they had a class at Forbes School, and I would have gotten a job at Forbes School. But there was a ruling. If you got married, you could not teach anymore. And I met my husband, and I got married.
How'd you meet him? How did you meet?
How did I meet him? That's a long story. I met him at my sister's house, actually. He had a brother that taught at Pitt for 3 years. He was at Harvard, and he got into some kind of a disagreement with them about his salary, and he was offered a job at Pitt. And he was here for 3 years. And when Asher was ready to go to work, he contacted J. Steele Gow. I don't know if you remember him.
Well, and where did Asher go to school?
Asher, he went to the University of Cincinnati, where he got one BA, and then he went to Harvard, where he got another one. He went to Harvard for 2 years.
He born in Pittsburgh, Asher?
No, they were all from Cincinnati, that family.
Mm-hmm.
And so through J. Steele Gow, there was an opening in the economics department, and he got this job as an instructor.
What year?
That was in 1926. After he was here for a year, we were married in August of 1926. 27, after he was here for 1 year. We came back from our honeymoon, and he found...
Where'd you go on your honeymoon?
We went to... we were in Saratoga.
And where were you married?
In my home.
In this house?
No, at 5624 Darlington Road. And at that time, there was a kosher caterer at the Rittenhouse in East Liberty, and he catered the dinner. But we had just the immediate family because I had a sister-in-law that was dying, and we didn't have too many people. So he found a letter saying that he was transferred, that the university was opening 3 branches, one in Johnstown, one in Erie, and the other, I can't remember the third place.
Bradford Woods or something.
I don't know.
Greensburg?
No, it wasn't Greensburg. But he decided on Johnstown because it was the closest to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they were not sure that this would succeed, so they told him if he didn't want to move, that they would pay his expenses to come home every week. And the reason that I didn't consider going was because this sister-in-law of mine that was sick died while I was on my honeymoon, and my brother came to my father and he says, what am I going to do? And they had a 4-year-old child, and the child was sick. He had been neglected for a whole year while his mother was sick. So my father, in typical fashion, said, so you'll come home. And when I came back from my honeymoon, I found my brother moved in bag and baggage with a sick child. And so I couldn't have gone to Johnstown anyhow. But this child hadn't learned how to eat. He was really neglected for a whole year, and he was sick, and he had a mastoid. I had to take him to the doctor and for treatments, and he was in the children's hospital, and he cried so terribly. A friend of mine was visiting somebody, and she heard this child screaming, and she went in, and that child got a hernia in the children's hospital from crying. And so when I came back, the doctor said, this child cannot be allowed to cry, and he said he's so young that we'll let him wear a belt or truss or whatever they call it. And he said, if you leave that on him all day long, this may heal without surgery. So we had to
I've got it in here.
It's all right. Take it.
When the junior college, they decided that it would be successful, I had to move to Johnstown. And my sister was going with her boyfriend at that time, and although she didn't want to quit teaching, she got married and she raised this little orphan.
What was his name?
Coleman Myers.
Is he still living?
No. He was one of these victims of smoking. He had throat cancer.
Okay. So
did you know Dr. Grauer?
Yeah.
That was his uncle.
I see. And now you moved to Johnstown.
I moved to Johnstown, and we went up there, and I found an apartment. It was a house that was made over into apartments. And the second day that I was there, the woman that owned it lived downstairs. She said, somebody wants you on the telephone. And one of my friends from Pittsburgh had a cousin that lived in Johnstown, and she told her that I was moving there. So she called me and she said, we're having a meeting of the Council of Jewish Women tomorrow, and I'd like you to come and introduce you to the women.
They had Jewish women in Johnstown?
Yeah. So I went to the meeting, and she introduced me not only as a newcomer, but as a new member. And I joined the Council of Jewish Women in 1920. see, 1928. And I've been a member ever since. Now, not having any children, I was immediately called upon to do things. In the college, they organized a girls' basketball team, and I was the chaperone of the girls' basketball team. Asher and I and another married couple were chaperones at all the school activities. And then they organized an orchestra. They couldn't get anybody to play the piano, so Asher said, oh, my wife will play the piano for me. So I was the pianist for the college orchestra.
Did he play a musical instrument?
Hmm?
Did Asher play a musical instrument?
No, none of them took any music. As a matter of fact, I used to go to all of the Philadelphia Orchestra had a series here. I always had a season ticket. We all liked music, and that when they started to come to Johnstown, we got tickets. And it wasn't that he didn't appreciate music, but he used to say, when are they bringing on the trained seals? He just felt, he used to get up very early in the morning, and he didn't like to stay up late. And there was another reason that we didn't go out too much socially, because every place we would go, there were two things that they harped on. How can a person of your intelligence be a religious Jew in this day and age? And he felt that that was his personal... He was very Orthodox. He came from a very Orthodox family.
Were there other Jewish professors?
No, not at that time, but subsequently there was another one, Ralph Alpern. Did you know Annex Alpern?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was her brother. He came up and I invited him for dinner. He was a bachelor. And he says, you know, he said, if I thought that I could be as happy as you two people, he says, I would become an Orthodox Jew and get married. They didn't observe anything. Now then, I was there 4 years, and when I left, I was vice president of the Council of Jewish Women. I was president of the Sisterhood.
What about Hadassah?
What?
What about Hadassah?
They didn't have Hadassah up there at that time. I was a member of Junior Hadassah, and when I moved back to Pittsburgh, they transferred Asher back to Pittsburgh after he was there 5 years. One of the men at Pitt was killed in an automobile accident, and they asked him to come back, and then he got a promotion. When they sent him up there, they told him he didn't get any more money, but they gave him a promotion in rank from instructor to assistant professor. And then when he came back to Pittsburgh, he became an associate professor.
Then he became
a full professor.
What about how...
Now, you wanted to know how I met him. We had his brother that came to Pittsburgh told him of a student he had whose father had a kosher butcher shop on Center Avenue. He said, you go up there and they'll ask them if there's any place where you can get kosher food. Well, he went up on Center Avenue and they told him that they would let him know, and they contacted him and told him of a very Orthodox man that lived in Squirrel Hill. And his name was A.J. Cohen, there was a shul on Beacon Street called Kofetskayim. He said, you go there on Saturday, and he goes to that shul, and introduce yourself, ask for A.J. Cohen. Well, he asked for A.J. Cohen, and he took him home, and they lived on Phillips Avenue, and he realized that this was a... not a restaurant. He thought he was going to get kosher food. It was a private home. And this A.J. Cohen's wife was a distant relative of ours. And she always kept in touch with my oldest sister. And they were going down to visit my sister, and they invited Asher for dinner. And they said, "Do you mind if we bring our guest?" And she said, "No, that would be fine." And that night, I was secretary of Junior Hadassah, and the president lived one block away from my sister in Oakland. And she said, "What are you doing tonight?" And I said, "I have to go to a meeting. I'm a secretary, and I have to go to a meeting at Sarah Gladstone's." Since she lived on Kennett Square, and my sister lived on Elsinore Square. She said, "Well, how about stopping over afterwards?" She said, "The Cones are coming down, and they're bringing a guest of theirs." So that night, it just poured buckets. It was really, my father said, "Anybody that goes out in this kind of rain is crazy." I said, "But I'm the secretary. I have to go." So I took a cab, and I went to the meeting. And, you know, in those days, you weren't even afraid to walk at night, and it was after 10. And I walked around the corner to my sister's, and I was dressed, for rainy weather. And she introduced me to Asher Isaacs, and she had some tea and cake, and we were sitting around the table. And my sister had a flair for writing, and she had written an article for the Criterion. Do you remember the Criterion? Mm-hmm. It was a whole page, and it was all about modern girls. And she said, "Where are the good old-fashioned girls that are willing to spend an evening at home with a boy? They all want to go out dancing or to dinners or to the show." And a whole page she had written about these girls. So we came home in a cab, and I said, he lived around, he had a room around the corner here. I said, "In spite of everything that my sister said about modern girls, if you'd like to come over," someone was just around the corner. I said, "I'd be glad to spend an evening with you." And the next thing I know, he called me up, and he asked me to go to a dance. He did dance. He took a couple of lessons to the Y. And we went to the Y. And the next time I met him, I was visiting an aunt that lived up on Cherokee Street, that's up on the hill. And I had to change streetcars at Center and Craig. And I'm waiting. This is about 9 o'clock at night, and I'm waiting for a streetcar, and somebody hits me in the back. And I went like this. And here it was Asher. He had been invited to dinner to Rabbi Cochin. Did you know mm-hmm. Dr. Cochin?
Yeah, it was Dr. Cochin's father.
Yeah. And he was waiting. He walked down, and he was going waiting for a streetcar. So he walked me home.
That's right where your sister's drugstore was.
What?
It's Center and Craig is where the drugstore was.
Yeah. No, the drugstore is at Melwood. It's one block down. Then he called me. Oh, then I invited him for dinner with fear and trepidation. And I said, "We keep strictly kosher. You don't need to worry." And I had a fish dinner. And he came, and that night I had met a young man, and I went to Columbia. I had gotten a Frick scholarship while I was teaching, and I met somebody up there who wasn't Jewish. Actually, this guy was a Methodist minister that gave up the pulpit because he said I had to preach things that I didn't believe in, and he became a Unitarian. And they had a dance for the Pennsylvania students, and he had a job at Hudson Street Settlement House in New York, around 245th Street. And I met him there, and he called up, and he asked if he had a boyfriend, and he said, would you get another girl? And there's a band concert at Central Park.
What was that? So, oh, New York.
So I asked this girl, she taught in the first grade in the same school that I was in. She got a scholarship too. She said, sure. So there were four teachers that we had an apartment together. So we went to Central Park and went to the band concert. They had a little jalopy. Then he called again. And I had a friend that also got a scholarship to Harvard. And when she went to register, the woman that registered her said, boy, am I glad we don't have a lot of Jews this summer. And she says, what do you mean by insulting me? She says, I'm Jewish. She says, I won't go to this school. And she called up the Board of Education, and she said, she says, I'm going to give you back the money. She says, I don't need to come here to be insulted. And they said, well, would you go to Columbia? And she said, yes. So she came a day late, and I was in a library room there, and this registration room was right next to it. And we were members of Junior Hadassah, but I really didn't know her, but she was real fat and jolly and everything, and she had a type of a voice that you would never forget. And we put on a minstrel show, and the first time I met her, we were black-faced. And I heard this voice, and I waited out. Mm-hmm. I waited outside, and I said, are you Frieda Perofsky? She was from Sharpsburg. And she said, yes, and she told me what happened. And here, she had some relatives that lived in the next apartment building that I was in. So the two of us sort of got together, and they had what they called a course in excursions. And if your classes were just in the morning, you were eligible to go on these tours. She said, "Why?" She did. Do you have classes in the afternoon? I said, no. She says, neither do I. She said, why don't we take this course? So all you had to pay your expenses, and it was wonderful. They took us to West Point and Francis Tavern and all these famous places in New York. And so we became very close friends. So the third time this guy called me up to go to the movies, I said, I don't think I better go. She says, oh, you go ahead. She says, you'll have a good time. What do you care? She says, you're not going to marry the guy. So we went out to the movies. We took walks, and he was so intelligent. He knew more about the Hebrew religion than a lot of Jewish fellows. And he was seeking something, and I felt so sorry for him, because he came from a long line of Methodist ministers. They were very strict. They weren't allowed to dance. They weren't allowed to play cards. They weren't allowed to do a lot of things. So he fell in love with me. And I told him, I said, I would never marry out of my faith. And I said, I could never be happy if I wasn't accepted. And he wrote to his mother and told him about me. And he showed me the letter that she wrote back and said, this is a very serious step, and you better reconsider it, and this and that and the other. And I told him, I said, you should not have written to your mother, because... And he wanted to come and see my father. And I said, absolutely not, because I would never marry out of my faith. Well, anyhow, to make a long story short, the night that I invited Asher for dinner, this guy calls up on the telephone. He's in Pittsburgh. And he was changing trains, and he wanted me to come down to the station. I said, I'm sorry, I have company. But when I told him that I couldn't marry him, he said, I have nothing in this country. He says, he got a job selling books in Puerto Rico, and he left the country. And he wrote to me, and he sent me a couple of gifts from there. And then he wrote and told me that he had met a girl down there that was always... I told him that I was going with somebody, and he married a girl that he met there that also was from this country. But then Asher called me and asked me if I would go to the Nixon with him to see... Harry Lauder. Mm-hmm. And this was 3 weeks after I met him. And during the intermission, he took out a roll of Lifesavers, and he said, would you like a Lifesaver? And I said, yes, and I took one. And when I handed it back, he was very shy. He took a hold of my hand, and he says, I am not in a position to get married. He said, I had borrowed some money while I was going to Harvard, and I'd like to pay back my debts before I would consider getting married. He said, would you be willing to wait for a year? And I said, yes. We were married 8 months later.
What was that school you said that had prejudice against the girl?
What?
Was it Harvard that had the prejudice for that girl?
Yes.
Harvard.
This was the registrar. She said, am I glad we don't have a lot of Jews here this year? And this Frieda, she just flared up and she says, I consider that an insult. She said, I'm Jewish.
Well, for instance, here you were in New York at a school and everything. How much freedom did you have at home? You were allowed to go and go out?
You mean to go out with boys?
Yeah. Is it over now?
Pretty sure.
No, there was really, my mother had died 6 months after we moved here, and there was never any restrictions, except this one teacher in the first grade that I was friendly with, she called me up and she said, she was invited to the Tech Mardi Gras, and her date asked her if she could get somebody for his boyfriend. He worked at the Bureau.